Morning.
Morning.
The next matter on our oral calendar this morning is in the matter of the application of Arbor Creek Holdings LLC for conditional use permit. Counsel, as you're getting squared away, I'll just advise you and remind you of our rules. Each of you will have 15 minutes, each side will have 15 minutes to present your argument. Counsel for appellant or for relator, you will have an additional. You're running out on me. That's fine. We'll wait for you. That's a first. Thank you. The matter is submitted. So, counsel, each side will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes to relator's counsel if you'd like to use that time for rebuttal. Please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument. The timing restrictions should be indicated in the lectern with a light and a clock. Please be mindful of those restrictions as you're giving your presentation. There's a button in front of the lectern that allows you to raise or lower it to your height. We have multiple briefs in this case from respondent. I'm wondering whether we're going to have one argument or two today.
Just one
argument.
Yes.
Okay, very good. So, counsel for appellant, whenever you are ready to proceed, you may. I said appellant. It's relator in this case.
We are the relators. Honorable judges of the court, respected counsel, my name is Tim Keene with QTAC Rock. I am appearing on behalf of the relator, Great Lake Sylvia Association, and we do have members of the association in attendance. Greater Lake Sylvia is one of the rare water resource treasures in central Minnesota. Very small watershed, spring-fed water, clear, deep lake in close proximity to the metropolitan area. The case before the court really boils down to this. The DeWitt County Planning Commission approval of the Arbor Creek third application conflict with the Wright County Comprehensive Plan. The standard of review is unreasonable, arbitrary, and capricious. The burden of proof is on the relator. And we understand.
The standard of review is deferential. I mean, the filter we look at, we try to determine whether it's arbitrary and capricious, but we do so with substantial deference to the decision-making body. And when a CUP is granted, there's even more deference given. Am I correct about
that? Is exactly correct, Your Honor. The burden of proof on the relator is very high to overcome the presumption of validity of the county's approval of the conditional use permits. And this deferential standard is well grounded in Minnesota decisions. But the bar, gets even higher when we take into account, as the court noted, that this is an approval and not a denial appeal. And so we understand the task before us, and the one who challenges the approval of a permit in this heightened deferential standard. We would note in the first instance, however, that Arbor Creek, not the relator, had the burden of demonstrating all of the standards and criteria in the Wright County ordinance shall be satisfied. Nowhere in the record will we find that Arbor Creek did bear this burden as required both under the Wright County Ordinance as well as Minnesota Statutes Section 394.22 and 0.301. Despite the evidence to the contrary, the Wright County Planning Commission failed its burden to articulate with facts on the record that the conditional use permits did not conflict with the Northwest Quadrant Plan.
But paragraph 12 of the order, the Planning Commission finds that the plans comply with the Northwest Quadrant Land Use Plan, and that they will not result in injury to the lake or neighborhood parcels. So what do we do with that?
Well, the that finding is conclusory and not supported by the facts, and contrary to the evolution of state law on this subject that requires that not only that the findings be stated in the resolution of approval or denial, but those findings be backed up with facts, and facts on the record. And that simply is weighted with a very conclusory conclusion, which is in contrast to the findings that were incorporated in the resolution of denial in June 2024, only 3.5 months before this. The Planning Commission adopted findings of denial of the second application. That denial was well articulated, supported by facts on the record, and we will.
Which sent the parties back to the drawing board for another modification of the plan, and then there was significant deliberation over that revision. Am I correct about the record?
Yes, the third plan was a revision of the previous two, but the most important features of the plan, which goes to the core of the conditional use permit, was the request to build below the bluff, not above the bluff. That was in the third application, as well as the construction of a road from the top of the bluff to the lakeside of the bluff.
All of which, it seems, was considered in the discussions.
It was.
So how are we to, I mean, the standard for arbitrary and capricious is a pretty high one for you, I think.
Understood, Your Honor.
I mean, disabuse me of the idea that the apparently significant deliberation focusing on the plan that was and the proposal. When I say the plan, I mean the comprehensive plan, and the look at the concerns that were raised. Help me to disabuse me of the idea that doesn't demonstrate a deliberateness that defeats the argument of capriciousness.
Certainly, Your Honor. The third plan was a modification only in quantity only. The amount of earth moved from plan two to plan three was reduced. The issues that were raised in the denial of plan two were all present in plan three. And when one looks at the close reading of the comprehensive plan and...
Just to be clear, sorry to cut you off, but you're not suggesting that the denial of Plan 2 has some precedential effect on the deliberation for Plan 3.
No, I'm not suggesting that because the Plan Commission denied Plan 2, that Plan 3, that set the precedent for Plan 3. However, same set of facts, same site, same request, and when the court compares and contrasts the comprehensive plan, the policies, importantly, major goal number four, which we address and reference in the plan, we can read the plan in its totality that the environmental stewardship intended to be reflected in the plan was also to be carried forward in consideration of the development proposals. And the protection of steep slopes and the unique features of the bluff around the lake are absolutely essential. So in the documents that's submitted by the applicant, we can see that the bluff was a 42-foot rise from the lakeside to the top of the bluff, over a roughly 150-foot run. That's a 28% vertical incline. Gray County Code defines a steep slope as 12%. So this bluff is an important resource that is intended to be protected, as well as the steep slopes. And
am I correct that your argument is mostly one of you believe that this conditional use permit violates the spirit of the land use plan as opposed to any particular letter of the land use plan? Is that accurate or not accurate?
Just to clarify, Your Honor, that is not a quite accurate characterization. If we look at the denial resolution that was adopted in...
Well, if you could tell me, what is the language specifically in the land use plan that you think is most directly offended by the conditional use permit?
The policy regarding steep slopes and steep slope protections found at page 78 in document 4, which are excerpts from the plan, that steep slopes should be protected and all conditional use permits should be reviewed with the intent of protecting the resources and the environment. Similarly, the bluffs are identified as important natural features to the lake and are to be preserved in their natural state. These are all very specific.
When you say, are you quoting that the bluffs are to be preserved as in untouched?
In their natural state.
And what's the language in the plan that supports the idea that as I read the plan, it seems like the plan allows for development, despite the overarching principles that you've mentioned, that there's some balancing. It seems to me in the plan that we want to preserve these natural qualities and also allow for development.
Correct.
Do you disagree that
No, the plan goes to lengths to balance the respect for property owners' rights, property owners' use of their property, and the prominence of protecting the unique and natural features in this portion of Wright County.
And my question is, so why wouldn't we read, or why, correct me if, well, why can't we read the process, the deliberation, and the conclusion, the permit, as also attempting to grapple with that same balance in a way that respects the Northwest Quadrant Plan?
Well, and ultimately that was what the Planning Commission was wrestling with, was that finding that balance of respecting the resources as well as the importance of the property owners' right to use their property.
So are you asking us to substitute our own balancing for the commission's balancing?
Not at all, Your Honor. We are asking the court to consider the plan, the plan policies, the major plan goals, the protections of the resource as specifically articulated in the plan, And the plan goes to lengths to commend the county in the implementation of its zoning regulations, in the implementation of development reviews, that these values be reflected in the decision-making process.
Do you dispute that the commission appears to have tried to credit those values?
I think they started out there, and I think they were worn down. The commission was very careful and deliberate, even relating back to the approval of this subdivision 2 years earlier. Great attention was given to the eastern two lots in this subdivision because they had the steepest slopes to the lake. They incorporated this provision that the lots 5 and 6 should be developed above the bluff. That was a condition of the approval of the plat and the original conditional use permit for this development. Those considerations, those thoughtful deliberations that were given by the Planning Commission in looking at the overall development and then targeting these two lots that had the steepest slopes, that they were very mindful of their task and very mindful of finding this balance between development pressure, development, reasonable use of the property, and incorporating the values of the Northwest Plan.
And your view is that the subsequent commission decisions were bound by the earlier deliberations and conclusions and couldn't reach a different conclusion and for a different proposal?
Well, they certainly were bound by the imposition of the conditions that they imposed on itself in the original approvals, to be sure. And
your time has expired, but you will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Mike Irvin, and I represent the respondent Wright County in this case. With me today is counsel for respondent Arbor Creek as well, and I believe the property owner is also in the audience today. Before you today is an appeal.
You're going to name your co-counsel or just leave her hanging there?
It's Ms. O'Neill Moreland. Before you today is an appeal from the decision of the County Planning Commission's decision to approve a conditional use permit for Arbor Creek to construct a home below the bluff on their property. The county respectfully requests that the court affirm the Planning Commission's decision. And before I go any further, I do want to stress the standard of review that's applied that has already come up. But as you mentioned, there's deference in all land use cases that's given to the decisions of local governing bodies, like the Planning Commission, who's tasked with hearing from all different parties about their interests in property, including the property owner, as well as neighbors, and exercising their judgment in these land use decisions. But there's even more deference that's given when an application for a land use permit is approved. So, you know, you talked about arbitrary and capricious. Some cases have referred to this as an abuse of discretion standard of review. So it's essentially the highest standard that this court can apply in the land use context.
Mr. Irvin, as the county commissioners, pointed out, there's nothing in the NWQ plan that says you can never build a house below the bluff. But as Mr. Keene points out on page 16 of his brief, there is language in the NWQ plan that says proposals that conflict with the adopted plan will only be approved in extraordinary circumstances when unique reasons justify the departure and the basic policies and intent of the land use plan are not compromised. So my question is, what is the extraordinary circumstance that justifies the building of a house below the bluff?
Well, I think if we look at the...
I mean, is it just to build a house below the bluff?
I think the extraordinary circumstances here are the great lengths that the applicant went to reduce the potential impact on the bluff with their different iterations of the plan that they put forward to the Planning Commission. But I would also point to...
Well, you know, that's a fair response, although it doesn't say, you know, proposals that conflict with the adopted plan will only be approved if someone, you know, who wants a change takes extraordinary measures to, you know, make it right. You know, when I think of extraordinary circumstances, I would be thinking of, well, you know, if we're going to put some sort of fireboat landing, you know, on the lake because we're concerned that, you know, fires could start. But really, is just building a house below the bluff because someone wants to build a house below the bluff an extraordinary circumstance?
I think we need to take a step back and look at whether there's a conflict between the proposed use here and the land use plan in the first place. And so I have the language here in front of me that the relator relies upon to bring their challenge to the court today. There's three provisions that they rely upon. The first says that steep slopes, wetlands, unstable soils, and other sensitive environmental features will be protected as far as practical in their natural stable state, and development on or near such areas may be required to provide larger lot sizes, enhanced setbacks, or other conditions to protect sensitive features. So we don't have a land use plan, at least with this provision, that prohibits development through a bluff or by a lake. And we have many houses on the same lake that are next to the lake. So this is not a unique, you know, extraordinary circumstance in the first place.
Well, the bluff makes it unique, doesn't it?
True. It does. It makes it different than some of the other properties on this lake. The second provision that Relator relies upon says that development on lakeshore property shall abide by state shoreland management rules to maintain, as far as practical, a natural shoreline and natural views of shoreland areas. So again, we see a provision in the comprehensive plan that specifically contemplates development, and what it says is, okay, we'll protect the sensitive features here that we're dealing with, so a bluff, as far as practical. And then the third provision that Relator relies upon says that, in general, development activity should take place in harmony with the existing stable natural environment. Development proposals should be adapted to suit the natural landscape rather than altering the land to suit the development. So again, with this third provision that they rely upon, we see that the comprehensive plan actually contemplates development in these areas where there may be sensitive features. So it's the county's position that there's no conflict between the, you know, the land use plan and the proposed use at issue here in the first place.
Going back to Judge Connolly's question, how would the county have us interpret and apply the extraordinary circumstance language in the plan? How does that fit in the analysis?
I think that, you know, we need, rather than thinking of this as an extraordinary circumstance in the first place, I think we look at this as, you know, a type of land use that's contemplated in this section of the comprehensive plan. It's not really an extraordinary circumstance when the subdivision
so
was
no
first.
No home is supposed to be built, no development is supposed to occur below the line unless it's extraordinary circumstance. Is the county admitting that this was not an extraordinary circumstance?
Well, that's when this property was first platted in 2021, it was subject to a conditional use permit that says you can build above the bluff without coming back to us for additional permission. But it specifically said in the platted subdivision that if the property owner wants to develop and build a home by the lakeshore, then they can do so as long as they come back and get a conditional use permit or an amended conditional use permit from the county. So, you know, from the very start of the property development here, when the subdivision was platted, they contemplated that there would be development potentially down by the lakeshore. So I view this as, you know, it's not an extraordinary circumstance. It was something that was contemplated all along by the county.
So I still don't understand what you'd have us do with that language. How does it fit as a matter of, in our process, how does it fit? Does it, is it something that we're to consider? Is it something that the commission was to consider? If so, how?
When we're talking about, you're talking about extraordinary circumstances.
Yes.
And then I would add, and when unique reasons justify the departure, I assume, based on the record, there's nothing that prevents them from building a house on top of the bluff.
Correct.
Okay. Because, I mean, that would be a reason, like, well, I can't build a house here because, you know, I don't know why. So I have, the only way I can build it if it's below the bluff.
I guess it's the county's position that all along it was contemplated that you can build down by the lakeshore. That was in the original platted subdivision, CUP. So this was not an extraordinary circumstance for them to come back and make this request. It was something that was contemplated all along. It's permitted by the county zoning ordinance, and it's, you know, they followed this process. If this was something that was prohibited entirely, we'd be in a different situation, but this is something that had been contemplated from the very start. It was not an extraordinary circumstance.
I'm going to try to take a run at this, too. So did the commission's order say anything about extraordinary circumstance or unique reasons?
I don't believe it specifically mentioned extraordinary circumstances, but what they did do in their order and what they did do in their discussion amongst the Planning Commission members was really take a hard look at all of the things that the applicant had done here to make changes to their proposal to get it to a place where it wasn't going to have an impact on the bluff and it wasn't going to have an impact on the lake. The record is filled with evidence demonstrating their efforts to go to great lengths to satisfy the Planning Commission's concerns and to help them reconcile their decision in this case with the language that we see in the county's comprehensive plan that's at issue, which essentially says development's permitted in this area, but we're going to do everything we can to protect bluffs and the lake. And so really, the county's Planning Commission put the applicant through the ringer here. They made them go back to the drawing board twice, and they made substantial changes specifically between their second CUP application and their third CUP application, which I think merits some attention here by the court. So when the first application came in June of 2023, they were proposing 16,000 plus cubic yards of land alteration. When they came back a second time in March of 2024, they were proposing 7,731 yards of land alteration. And when they came back a third time in September of 2024, they were proposing less than 3,500 yards of cubic yards of land alteration. In addition to that,
I have to admit, I don't understand. So, like, that means there's only 3,500 part of the bluff that's going to be removed? Is that kind of what it means?
No, this was across the entire property.
Okay.
Some above the bluff, some below the bluff, some in the bluff, and in fact, the engineer that was brought in for the third application reduced the amount of land alteration that was within the bluff, so the most sensitive area. They also, there was a driveway on the property that was proposed to go basically through the middle of the property. They found an existing trail through the bluff and redesigned their whole plan to put the driveway next to this existing trail. So they'd be using a portion of the bluff that's already basically been cleared. Another thing about the,
does
I had
the
to
record
learn.
Indicate, I mean, can you see the driveway? Like, if I'm on the lake, can I look up? But you know, because I assume this is the driveway that goes from the bluff to the cabin on the. Can I see the driveway? Does the record indicate? Or is it sort of hidden by trees?
I think it's going to be hidden by trees. There's a picture in there of the trail.
Fair enough. Just trying to get I assume this doesn't look like I-94 going down to the lake.
Yes. Another important thing about so I had to learn about this too, cut and fill. Cut is the amount of land that's removed from property in order to complete a project. Fill is the amount of land that's added to the property. And what the engineer did with this third application was attempt to balance those things. So rather than either trucking a bunch of new land onto the property or removing a bunch of land, it was going to be roughly balanced. So we're not adding any new you know, land that could potentially make its way into the lake or cause erosion in the bluff. We're balancing those things. They minimized the amount of cut specifically through the bluff. It was down to 50 cubic yards of alteration roughly within the bluff itself. There was some fill that was added. One of Arbor Creek's experts testified that fill is not going to have a detrimental effect on the bluff, so that actually would, might be helpful. So they went to great lengths to address the Planning Commission's concerns from these prior applications to make sure they were getting it to a place where the Planning Commission felt comfortable that there wasn't going to be a detrimental effect on the bluff or on the lake. Other steps they took, this house was originally supposed to be have an 80-foot setback from the lake. They increased that to 102 feet. So if you're talking about, you know, adding some fill down by the lake that could make its way into the lake, increasing that setback would make that harder to do. And they had detailed grading, drainage, erosion, and stormwater plans. And they ran this by the Minnesota DNR. They ran this by the local soil and water body and the Indian Affairs Council. And none of those entities had any concerns with the plan. We also have evidence in the record that this project was supported by local residents, including members of the Lake Association who's brought this appeal.
Let me back you up. You know, not unanimously, right? Not unanimously.
Correct.
Okay. Let me back you up to the extraordinary circumstances again. So if the Northwest Quadrant Plan requires that it's only approved in extraordinary circumstances and for unique reasons, was the commission supposed to engage in that language before approving a variance?
I don't think that that's necessary. The criteria for granting a conditional use permit in the zoning ordinance only requires that the Planning Commission find that there be no conflict with the comprehensive plan. I mean, do we have to go through this 98-page comprehensive plan document and try to figure out which ones might be at issue and get out in front of those in our order? That's not required by the case law, and it, you know, it's not required by the zoning ordinance.
Is it a conflict if it's approved without it being an extraordinary circumstance?
No, I don't think that that's the case. Again, it's...
So if they're just approving left and right, any application that comes in without making the fine, they're like, well, there's no conflict, but they're not engaging at all in the extraordinary circumstance, that's not in conflict with the plan?
I think taking the step back again, it's the county's position that this was not an extraordinary circumstance in the first place, where this is even an exception to the county's comprehensive plan, given the language that, you know, we've been discussing here as a potential basis for denial. I see I'm out of time. I would welcome any further questions otherwise.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilor Relator, any rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. And just one minor correction in respondent counsel's statement of the standard of review. This is not the highest standard in land use matters. That is reserved for legislative decisions. This is a quasi-judicial decision, and as the court is quite familiar, that is an intermediate level of review. In my cumulative 58 years serving as a city attorney, mostly in growing and developing communities, I've sat through a lot of land use proceedings. And it's easy for me to understand how these dedicated, unpaid volunteer planning commissioners would grow weary of multiple serial contentious applications and meetings that...
There's no finding that they grew weary. There's no finding that they grew weary. How would we... You're asking us to ascribe motive to the decision that I'm not sure is in the record.
No, Not so much. I'm just observing, based on my experience in the public realm for over 30 years, that multiple applications on the same development proposal on the same property, the deliberators, the decision makers, do grow weary. And I would add, and I think this is a footnote that was noted
I would just add, some of us get tired of multiple appeals from all of those decisions that are made to the Court of Appeals. But we're still
there
here.
There is that. But there's also a six-month holiday that is to be, it's actually codified between a denial of an application for a conditional use permit and a new application. And so we have a denial in June of 2024. A new application was submitted and accepted by the planning department 3.5 months later, disregarding that six-month holiday that is required between a denial and a new application.
But that issue's not before us on appeal, right?
That is not. It's a fact in the record that we don't know what was behind it, but we do know it's indisputable that...
Well, the question is, how does it bear on our analysis of the legal issues that are actually before us?
Well, what happened? What changed between application two and application three?
Well, my question, you're suggesting a procedural foible of not enough time between petitions, and so I'm trying to get a sense of why you believe that matters in our analysis.
Because I think it's important for the court to understand what changed between application two and application three. What was the material difference after?
So you're
the
not
Planning Commission.
So you're not making an argument that the timing should matter to us. You're making an argument that the substantive difference between the proposals is what matters.
That is the only thing that matters, Your Honor.
Okay, so the timing doesn't matter.
Well, it mattered enough to be codified
I mean, for our decision, there's no legal issue before us.
We did not... All right. Raise that as a legal issue. We did not preserve that as a legal issue. We bring that as a fact on the record to the court's attention.
So, counsel, I'd
final
like to,
plan.
I'd like ahead. To get into this extraordinary circumstance piece that we were talking with your opposing counsel with. The opposing counsel makes a good argument about the use is not in conflict with the policy. That's what the ordinance requires. It's not in conflict. And it seems like the order made that finding. It's not in conflict. So does that language, extraordinary circumstances, do we need to engage in that language, or does the commission, should they have engaged in that language?
Well, nowhere in the record did the Planning Commission engage in that. We briefed that issue. We brought it to the attention that there was only in the final deliberations on the third application, the discussion of the no conflict with the comprehensive plan finding requirement received practically no attention in the deliberate. There was one passing reference by one planning commissioner. In the entire deliberations on the third approval, this issue did not get the attention it deserved in the final review.
It's a curious requirement. I mean, you've got, I'll just quote it in full, proposals that conflict with the adopted plan will only be approved in extraordinary circumstances, when unique reasons justify the departure, and the basic policies and intent of the land use plan are not compromised. I'm trying to figure out a circumstance when the basic policies and intent of the land use plan are not compromised, when you'd ever have a conflict with the adopted plan.
Well,
third requirement necessarily subsume the first.
Well, that's why communities plan. That's why they step back from the firing line and develop these thoughtful plans that provide...
I understand that. My question is, so this third element, the basic policies and intent of the land use plan are not compromised. That's a requirement before a conditional use permit can be issued. The sentence begins, proposals that conflict with the adopted plan will only be approved in extraordinary circumstances, et cetera. I'm trying to get a sense of whether, as a matter of logic, there could ever be a circumstance where a proposal does not compromise the basic policies and intent of the land use plan, but that conflicts with the adopted plan. Is that even possible?
That's a fact-specific inquiry that...
The logic question.
Yes, absolutely. And...
I mean, it's not a fact question that I'm asking. I'm asking a logic question. How can you, if a proposal does not, if a proposal conflicts with the plan, how can it also be a proposal that doesn't compromise the plan?
And what would those extraordinary circumstances be? Clearly the plan, clearly the ordinance contemplates that possibility, but I don't think the facts presented here render that extraordinary circumstance. And
well, thank you.
We respectfully request that the court reverse the Planning Commission and find that this matter was decided in an arbitrary, capricious, and unreasonable fashion.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Keene, Mr. Irvin, and thank you, Ms. O'Neill Moreland, for your briefing in the matter on behalf of your client. The matter is submitted, well argued. We will take the matter under submission and decide it within the statutory period. This was the last case we have in our oral calendar for this morning, and so we're in recess. Thank you.
All rise.